to the KTEP Book Club on Perspectives. I'm your host, Louis Sines. And joining us on Perspectives today is Dr. Jay Richards. Dr. Richards is the author of Silhouette of Virtue. And Silhouette of Virtue is his latest novel. Actually, it's a novel that came out. And it's about, well, we'll talk a little bit about that in just a minute, but I want to introduce Dr. Richards and talk a little bit more about him. His specialty is the evaluation and treatment of violent offenders, such as homicide perpetrators, mentally ill killers, and sexually violent predators in the field of criminal psychology. He is known for groundbreaking research, innovative and provocative theoretical papers, and evocative and insightful case studies of psychopaths and other mentally disordered offenders. And Dr. Richards, just with that introduction there, I guess we could talk for a long time about that and different things.
Well, we sure would, but we'll get more done if you call me Jay.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jay, and thank you for joining us. And again, we'll talk a little bit about your book, but have you always been interested in writing and in science, or when you were young, did you watch a lot of those shows back then like you do now? But, you know, there was Quincy and other novels and stuff like that. Were you always interested in science or just writing, period?
I was always interested in writing. In fact, a memory that's popped up recently for me was that in, you know, grade school, I did some clowning in class, and the teacher assigned me to go home and write 1,000 sentences, a short sentence, 1,000 times as a punishment. And I came back with a short story about Jason and the Argonauts, which got me in more trouble. But, well, I was that interested, and so it's been an interest and a desire. And I watched all those shows, Quincy and the Sherlock Holmes movies with Basil Rathbone, those old movies that had a great atmosphere.
So this novel, Silhouette of Virtue, did you get sent to your room to write this novel, or how did that come about?
Well, if I did, I'd be in that room for 15 years.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Working on that novel.
So how did this come about?
Well, I think, you know, I've always had an interest in how people think, and I've always had this interest in literature. And when I was studying literature as an undergraduate, my professors were saying, you know, you write like a psychologist. You seem to think like a psychologist. Maybe you should think about doing that. And then, you know, it took about 5 years, and 5 years later, I did undergraduate school and start with psychology. But I think, and specifically forensic psychology, I was trying to make sense out of people who I knew who were committed crimes, were going to jail, visiting people in jail, and people in situations like that. My mother worked at a VA hospital, so I saw, you know, mentally ill patients. We'd sometimes have a picnic, go out, and we'd be with the patients, and my mother would make sure that, you know, we were safe with them, and teach us that these are people with some problems, but they're manageable. So all that was really, you know, fascinating to me, the mind and actually having direct contact with people who had problems with the criminal justice system, and finding that some of them had, you know, unusual personalities and thought in unusual ways.
When you were talking about, you know, being with your mom and going out and meeting some of these patients, I guess as a child, as a little boy, were you curious about, like, what was wrong with these people?
Yes, I definitely was, and my mother would explain that, you know, any aspect of the person that might be problematic or dangerous, only from the perspective that, you know, you're around this person, so they might seem frightened at times, they might talk to themselves, and getting that explanation. And I think it was an early start to seeing that people with mental illnesses are just that, they're people first, and then they do have some mental health problems, and getting comfortable being in the room and being in the space with people who have serious mental health issues. So I think that was, you know, early on, it was a way of feeling, you know, direct contact with people who have these problems, and realizing, oh, you know, this is not going to be harmful to me, and I need to understand how to think about it and what the limitations of the people and situations are. But other than that, there are things to learn, and they're interesting people.
As a forensic psychologists, people might wonder, well, Jay, what is a typical workday like? And, you know, we talked about this earlier, the fact that TV shows have brought forensic psychologists and pathologists and coroners to the forefront. And I guess the only one I remember from when I was growing up is Dr. Quincy. But later on, we have like CSI, and then you have Robin Cook, who writes about Dr. Stapleton and Laurie Montgomery, who work at the city morgue, Jonathan Kellerman. And people are fascinated by death, but not just by death, but what happens. How did this person die? And what do you all do when you get into the morgue?
Well, you know, I'm a psychologist, and so what I'm dealing with are people who are still around.
Uh-huh.
I have had a case where I had to do a postmortem psychological, which is interesting. But my work, part of forensics, is answering psychological questions for the courts. That's the forensic aspect. And usually I'm answering questions like, is this person going to be dangerous in the future if they're released from a hospital or from a jail or confinement facility? So it's a risk assessment question. I'm answering questions for the court like, can this person participate in a trial? Do they understand the trial process? Can they cooperate with their attorneys?
And I guess people might wonder also, Jay, what about people like who never got to go to court or to trial, like Lee Harvey Oswald and John Wilkes Booth and people like that? Because you know, somebody who shoots the president or allegedly shoots the president, you're going, well, something must be wrong with that person.
Yeah, well, you have to look at the motivation for the person. And I think it's true that even people who have a political motivation or they're paid, well, they gravitate toward those situations where that might happen. So it is probably has to do with a mental illness. And I had some contact with a Hinckley case when I worked in Washington, D.C. And his case, like many other of these people who are presidential threateners or people who attack anyone related to the White House or the Congress, often they're just very narcissistic people. They have this expanded view of themselves as somebody who is important, as someone who should be known, as someone who's going to do something important in the world. And they aren't thriving people. And then they realize, well, I can do something violent that will draw attention. I can make a big impact, even though it's going to be a negative, destructive impact. So I think that trait of narcissism is very, very prominent among these people who attack a third party who's prominent or important, not really someone related to them.
We're visiting with Jay Richards. Jay is the author of the novel Silhouette of Virtue. And this novel is based in part on actual crimes. And it tells a story of a college town in southern Illinois terrorized by a series of violent sexual assaults against young Asian women. And the question that Jay seeks to answer in this prose when you read the novel is, as he develops the characters of his murderers, is why? And I guess that is a question, too, that the reader and the listener would want to ask you, Jay. Why?
Well, I think that why question is really at the heart of this novel. As you mentioned, it was based on some real events back in the 1970s. And then using my imagination, I sort of turned up the volume and made the violence more dramatic, maybe. But the basic point of the book is sort of a philosophical point, and that point is that the world we live in is a terrible, beautiful, and mysterious place, and that we also have these qualities, that we're beautiful, we can be terrible, each one of us, and we're a mystery. So that why, that part of the why, is the mystery of who the characters are, and why their motivation, and also asking the reader about the mysteries they have in life. There's a chapter title in the book that we never really know anyone. Do we ever really know anyone? And the protagonist, Dr. Rivers, who's a philosophy professor, discovers something about a close friend that sort of blows him out of the water. He can't believe it at first. And he realizes, well, you really never know anybody that well.
And sometimes, as you mentioned there, you know, a crime will happen and people will say, well, gosh, you know, he appeared to be such a nice guy, or she was such a nice lady, and we just talked the other day and we didn't realize that they were capable of that.
Well, I think that's often true. You know, people want to maintain the face of normality. There's a book called The Mask of Sanity by Dr. Robert Hare, who's an expert on psychopaths. And his book actually talks about the strangeness of the psychopath. They try to look normal, but they really aren't. And I think another aspect of the phenomenon you just talked about, where people know someone next door and they realize after they've committed the crime that they seem normal, is that we all live in different worlds. We're all living in different plays. And we sort of, you know, we act out parts in the other person's play, but that other person has their own play that they're writing and living through. And we sort of overlap with it. So there's whole scenes and acts of the play that we just don't know about because we're not in those scenes.
Irving Goffman, in one of his books, writes about what you just mentioned, about acting in plays, and he says we all have a front stage and backstage.
Absolutely, and I think it's a healthy thing to have those things. What's the problem would be is that the things in the backstage are so horrific or unacceptable that you can never bring them to light with anyone, and they become, you know, these ultimate secrets that then start to take over and have control over what's going on in the front stage.
So in your book, and we're talking with Jay Richards, The Silhouette of Virtue is the book, the novel. In this book, how, because it's based on some actual crimes and your experience, how did you put all this together so that it was true, but at the same time, you want to add a little bit of that mystery to it and people can realize that, wow, this stuff really does happen. This isn't just a book.
Yes. Well, I think the goal of the novelist, at least in part, is to help people see the world from the inside, the minds of people who are not like them in any number of ways. And in this situation, I was able to take a real situation where a young African-American graduate student was accused of sexual assault on a campus in Illinois back in the 70s. And that incident divided the campus. Some people were saying, well, it's just, they're just singling him out as part of racism. And other people were saying, wait a second, there's some evidence that he's involved. And that scenario played out over a long period of time, like legal situations often do. And there was no internet back in those days to track everything day to day. So that allowed my imagination to run wild. And I realized this event brings in so many aspects of our culture, you know, the idea of stereotypes, the fear we have of sexual assault over many other kinds of dangerous things. And I thought, well, I can tune up the volume here, turn up the volume. If instead of a graduate student, the person who is accused is a university professor, in this case, he's a drama instructor, and instead of having the police investigating, have an amateur sleuth who is Dr. Rivers, who's the philosophy professor who supports this other African-American professor. There are only two African-American professors at this university, and one is accused and the other one says, well, I'm going to support him and put up money for his legal defense and take a stand. And when he does that, almost immediately he starts to realize, well, maybe there is evidence that this person is involved, and maybe I've made the wrong decision. So I was able to introduce this aspect of his personal conflicts. Dr. Rivers is someone who hadn't made any decision that he couldn't step away from until this point. But when he makes this decision to support his colleague, Calvert Duncan, who's been accused, he can't step away from that. Immediately he becomes embroiled in politics and legal issues and ultimately in some personal attacks from from irate citizens.
Now, what you just talked about here, once Dr. Rivers jumps in and he does this for his friend and starts to kind of have doubts or realize that it may have been him, how difficult was it for you to decide which way to turn there as far as your writing?
Well, I think this book is I have to say, it's a complex book and it's multiple layers, so it's very character-driven. So it's driven by the character of Dr. Rivers, Nathan, and by the criminals. And so part of the book is trying to flesh out what sexual psychopaths are like. What do they do? How do they think about the world? How do they relate to people on a day-to-day basis? And another part of it is showing how Dr. Rivers, who's someone who's trying to self-actualize. You remember that term was big in the 1970s, and the whole self-actualization, humanist psychology movement. He's trying to actualize himself. So here's someone who's trying to function at the highest possible human level and striving for perfection and excellence on one end of the spectrum. And on the other, you have the psychopath who's trying to get through life through deception and through violence, and not concerned about, much more concerned about immediate gratification and power than about self-development. So I think the novel is really driven by those things. And of course, the structure of the novel is finding out who is really involved in this series of rapes and attempts to cover up the identity of the perpetrators.
We're visiting with Jay Richards. Jay is the author of Silhouette of Virtue. It's would you call it a mystery thriller mystery?
Jay? Yeah, I think that's the genre that sort of fits in, but I think really, I think of it as a philosophical novel. The point I made about the world being terrifying and mysterious and beautiful, that's the point the book is trying to make philosophically, and because Nathan Rivers is a philosopher, the book plays around with ideas, and the characters talk about philosophical ideas, and to a certain extent they enact them. So you see whether or not these ideas really support good behavior, good living, or whether they don't.
We talked earlier about our audience and the fact that they're fascinated by death. They're fascinated by how did this person die? What happened? And I guess that's why people like to read, psychological thrillers. And the fact that when you wrote this, what kept you or what did it keep you as far as, drawing from your own experience and the fact that this may have been based on some actual crimes? At any point that you realized, wait a minute, I'm writing a novel here, not something that is true?
Well, I think that the novel, Silhouette of Virtue, it really doesn't reflect the actual historical reality of the crimes that took place, those many years ago. So it is definitely a fictional aspect. But it does weave together aspects of my experience as a forensic psychologist. For example, there are two characters in the book who are psychopaths. And both of those characters stem from my experience of a young man who was hospitalized on a psychiatric unit for rape, which is unusual. A young African-American man, very articulate, very, very attractive, engaging person. And observing him in therapy group and interacting with him, I found his personality just amazing because he had these various sides to it. And in the novel, that one person, that complex person, is sort of split into two. One is a character named Carper, Jeffrey Carper, who's a white man who is striving to be important. He wants to join the police and have power there. He wants to join the fire department, but he's being rejected at every turn. And then another man, Calvert Duncan, who's the drama professor, who is troubled, just very troubled by both his experiences as a Vietnam veteran and his sense of never being accepted as a black man in American society and having served in a war for that society and being bitter about that. So that young man that I knew in reality is sort of split into two people. So since that never happens in reality, it's sort of, you know, it's the way fiction works is that you can take aspects of one person and explore them through different characters, or take, you know, characteristics from different people and put them together into one character.
Now, Jay, talking about, you know, race relations and the fact that this book takes place in the 70s, the book we're discussing is Silhouette of Virtue. Jay Richards is the author. How do the situations change from, say, the 60s? You know, we recently celebrated the anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, and then the 70s, and race relations today.
Well, I think one of the places that overlaps in the novel there, in the novel, Nathan Rivers is living with Sharon, who's his common-law wife, and she's white female from an upper-class background, and Nathan Rivers is from a African-American, lower middle-class background. And in that society in the 1970s, this was really not acceptable. I mean, I think not only that he's living with this white woman openly, but he's not marrying her. He's just sort of like got her dangling another decision he hasn't completed in life. Whereas today, I don't think that would raise a lot of eyebrows. On the other hand, Rivers finds that the police in the area he's in, and even the university police, that he constantly has to negotiate his involvement in trying to find out about these crimes, with the police being suspicious that he's an African-American man in this town. He's going around checking into things. He must be up to no good. And at one point in the book, they actually come to his house at like 3 a.m. The police come there. And Rivers, his first reaction is, well, here, this is going to happen. I'm going to get beat down, and, you know, I better make some phone calls and see if I can get at least people to know what's going on. And I think that awareness of police authority and African-American men, obviously still such a prominent issue in our society today. And it's explored somewhat in the book. And it's a Watergate-era book, so the theme of abuse of authority is very prominent. You know, the Vietnam War is ending, and the revelations about Nixon are coming out, and people are starting to question authority of all kinds and tending to see authority as corrupt. And, of course, it can be corrupt, but Rivers has to walk that line between knowing that you know, there are people in the world who are striving to make the world a good place, and a place where people can thrive, and then there are people in the world who are, you know, selfish and seeking advantage and self-gratification. And he sees that in the authority figures around him and the political structure as well.
We're visiting with Jay Richards. Jay is the author of Silhouette of Virtue. It's a novel that takes place in the 1970s in a small town in Illinois. Now, Jay, you just mentioned Vietnam and Watergate, and one of the reviews talks about the fact that these crimes that are being caused against the Asian women is payback for America's betrayal in Vietnam.
Yes, the perpetrator, the rapist, tells these Asian victims that I'm doing this for this political reason. I'm doing this because this is payback for Vietnam. And obviously, at one level, that's absurd because, you know, these women have nothing to do with the war. They're there for, there's an art program that sort of has an emphasis on Asian art, and they're there for that. But he's using this excuse, you know, as sadistic people often do. They're using an excuse to justify their violence and to make it into something righteous. But that was a time period where there were many people who were feeling that the United States had been, you know, taken a big blow, that the structure of society was crumbling, and that something major had to be done to shore things back up. And sometimes those people did resort to violence.
We're visiting with Jay Richards. Jay is the author of Silhouette of Virtue. Jay, in addition to being an author of novel, he is also a forensic psychologist. And one of the things that I want to touch upon also, Jay, is people may wonder, okay, you are a forensic psychologist, so tell me, what would your day be like? Because we get stereotypes, as we mentioned, on TV and sometimes books. So let's hear directly from the doctor's mouth.
Well, my day is a little different from probably most forensic psychologists. Many forensic psychologists work in a psychiatric hospital where people are being evaluated because they've committed crimes and being evaluated to see if they could go to trial or being evaluated to see if were they sane at the time of the crime. Could they tell the difference between right and wrong at that time? Could they understand reality at that time? And I've done that kind of work, but right now I primarily do evaluations for the courts related to future risk, and in particular, risk posed by sexually violent predators. And the sexually violent predator laws around the state, I think there are 20 states that have that law now, that law seeks to detain people who've committed sexual offenses who are still dangerous and are likely to go on, even though they've served a prison sentence. So my day is likely to start off by going through records, hundreds and hundreds of pages of records. I have a case here now that where there's 16,000 pages of records. Going through those records to try to understand the nature of this person's background, what led them into crime, evaluating what are the risk factors that might mean crime in the future. So that will be part of my day every day, going through case records and then interviewing and testing these offenders, often in a prison or in a jail, sometimes in a hospital, to determine their current functioning. So I have all these records in front of me. Then I have to determine their current functioning and match that to the likelihood they're going to reoffend. And of course, that means also understanding something about the environment, the situation, say maybe the zip code that they're going to re-enter. What will be the conditions when they go back in society? Will they have the same triggers? Will they have the same temptations and deficits that they had before? So then the next part of my day would be to formulate that material. It means scoring tests, interpreting tests, and it means writing detailed reports that are hopefully about complex issues, but hopefully at the end sort of understandable and clear about this individual offender and the likelihood that they will commit a crime in the future. And the way things have progressed, we actually end up citing specific percentage estimates, like this person is likely 44% likely to commit a crime in the next 5 years of violent crime, and 65% likely to commit a new violent crime in the next 10 years.
Okay, Jay, we're out of time now, but we want to thank you very much for being with us. And it sounds a lot more fun to write a novel than have one of your typical days.
Amen.
Okay.
It's a lot more fun.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We've been visiting with Jay Richards. Jay is a doctor, a forensic psychologist, and he is the author of the book Silhouette of Virtue. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building, thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sanz.